following pre-recorded program is sponsored by Tabes Tech, LLC. This is Pro Business Colorado with your host, Dave Tabor, on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor is a show about spirit, the spirit of opportunity created by people who could be successful anywhere and choose to start and grow businesses here in Colorado. And whether it's having a business meeting during a bike ride or that special kind of collaboration that goes on here in Colorado, I get jazzed talking with dynamic people, with interesting businesses, and with subject matter experts who get that Colorado is special. All my guests are people who love Colorado, and they inspire me. They can inspire you and help us do business better here in Colorado. Today, I'm joined in the studio by my friend Ed Sealover of the Denver Business Journal. Ed covers food and hospitality, which includes beer, right, Ed?
Amen.
So glad you're here. And Ed also covers business issues at the state capitol, and we'll be talking about issues with Ed as well later in the show. Ed and I are joined by two entrepreneurs, one from the beer and one from hospitality. Kevin Selvey of Crazy Mountain Brewery. Thanks for making it down the mountain, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. And also, and when we speak with Kevin, we're going to talk about this notion of Colorado craft beer going international. We've had lots of other beer brewers in Colorado on the show, but this notion of international, I think, is going to be a fun one. We'll dig into that. Also, we'll be speaking with Eli Wallen of Hotel Engine, a company that grew 500% last year. He's aggregating smaller business clients and now some big business clients to create savings and improve travel logistics. So thanks for being here, Eli.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yep, so he's Hotel Engine. We'll be getting to all of our guests soon. I want to make sure that you check out the Pro Business Colorado podcast. Today's show and past shows featuring leaders of great companies like Otterbach, Zeal Optics, Full Contact, PharmaJet, American Furniture Warehouse. All of these past guests and today's are available via podcast. These episodes are available at the proco360.com website. Again, that's proco360.com. So let's jump right in then for the first segment. And again, Ed Sealover of the Denver Business Journal, Kevin Selvey, Crazy Mountain Brewery, Eli Wallen of Hotel Engine. So thanks all for being here today. And I want to start with Ed. You know, as everyone knows, you cover hospitality. Any smart and sophisticated readers are reading your articles in the Denver Business Journal. And I want to start with this story that you did about whether the Denver restaurant market has reached saturation. This is intriguing to me. And I think it ties over even into the beer business and the craft brewery business. What's your take on the Denver marketplace reaching saturation?
Well, you've seen the restaurant scene growing like crazy for the past couple of years, both as more entrepreneurs get into it, feeding more people who are moving to Denver, feeding more tourists who are coming here. And it's really grown and boomed and gotten itself a national reputation. But you're starting to see some restaurants, particularly chain restaurants, pulling back right now. And the question is whether or not the 220 to 250 restaurants that are opening every year in Denver, with a far, far smaller number than that closing, are just overloading the city. I mean, and people talk about it in the industry from two ways. One, it is, of course, harder to find customers, though there is still a rising tide floats all boats mentality. And I talk to people, especially in areas like Rhino, where they say, look, the more that come in, the more we draw people, the more we all benefit. But the other trick is it's really hard to find work right now.
You mean workers, people to work?
Yes, yeah. To work in their restaurateurs complain about how hard it is. That's going to increase the amount that they have to pay, especially for cooks, which are in very short demand right now. That's going to raise their prices to the customer. That's going to make customers a little bit more squeamish about coming in. And frankly, if you're not paying for the right level of staffing, your customers are going to come into a service that they're going to dislike too. And in this atmosphere with there being so many restaurants, people don't give you a second chance if they don't have a good first experience. So, yeah, I don't know that we are at absolute saturation point, but we're probably getting close right now where the little mistakes that used to bog down restaurants are becoming big problematic mistakes for them right now and could lead to a much shorter lifespan.
Well, speak to the notion that chains are pulling out while new restaurants are opening.
One of the interesting things about Denver, and I think this is true of a number of cities, but people talk about it especially with Denver, is that people want a local product. They want local beer. They want local foods. I mean, if you go into a restaurant, an independent restaurant, especially in the Denver area, you might notice that it mentions where the chicken you're eating came from. It's going to cite the farm.
That farm to table now in quotes kind of a phrase. Yeah.
Right. And it's and people are shying away from something they can get anywhere else. And I'm thinking, I think I'm probably thinking of a different story than you are, but one I wrote about a month ago about a bar in the downtown Denver area that that the owners did not change. They just closed the bar. The Tilted Kilt that was for 7 years a pretty popular bar. And they said, no, people want something local. So they turned it into a local beer and spirits place and reopened it.
Same owners?
Same owners, just completely different concept because they thought that's going to draw better.
Yeah, if you've just joined us, this is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, the voice. The other voice you heard is Ed Seelever of the Denver Business Journal. This show will be available at proco360.com. Let's keep talking about that notion of having to shift a restaurant, having to change its approach, its style, and so forth to keep people coming. You mentioned, you and I have talked in the past about loyalty. With all of the new restaurants, you mentioned 220 to 250 new restaurants opening every year. Are people still loyal to their favorites, or are you seeing a trend where people are just hopping from one to the next to try it?
Well, I think you see more of the latter. People do talk about loyalty going down a little bit. I think that's a trend too in the brewing industry in many ways. Is that the beers that you used to drink, you know, every week are now things you drink once a month because there's so much more to try. Millennials are thought of as a generation that's much less loyal to a brand and more open to interesting experiences. And people talk about repeat customers in different terms than they used to at this point.
Kevin Selvey of Crazy Mountain Brewery, are you seeing that same thing? Are you seeing that it's tougher to get and keep customers loyal?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really been a fundamental shift in the beer industry over the past, 5-7 years. I mean, 7 years ago, you would, as we're speaking about restaurants, you would go into a restaurant. For example, you'd get a permanent tap handle. You'd have that tap handle for a year or 2 years.
Meaning the brand of beer that you sell with a tap.
Correct. That would be your real estate. And that has long disappeared. I mean, anymore.
Now they're rotating these taps, right?
Absolutely. So you might go into a new restaurant where they'd have 10 tap handles. Well, they'll never have the same beer on there twice.
So maybe, and we're going to talk about this when we come back after a break, but, you know, maybe the objective of something for someone like Crazy Mountain is to have them, if they're rotating, to rotate among your beers. And we're going to talk about that. This is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, and you can find the podcast at proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. We'll be back after this break.
News Talk 710. KNUS.
When you look around great cities like Denver and you see the amazing new buildings encased in glass, that glass was likely engineered and manufactured by J.R. Butler. At J.R. Butler, they have jobs that reward hard work, inspire loyalty, and develop leaders. How do you know when you find a company that's worth your commitment, one that will reward your loyalty with training and advancement? Felix Mestis, with a high school degree, started in manufacturing and is now Director of Field Operations. He joined CEO Mark Butler on Business Colorado and said this about the opportunity.
That's something that's back to the culture that we talk about at J.R. Butler. I think that surprises a lot of people is that it's very, very real. It's something that all, you can go one day turning wrenches on a job somewhere to the next day having dinner with the CEO of a large construction firm and being able to have those skills there that they're not necessarily taught anywhere else.
If you are looking for a great company built by building great leaders, contact JRButlerINC.com. That's JRButlerINC.com. Working toward the future together.
Pro Business Colorado with me, Dave Tabor, is a show featuring world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose to be here in Colorado. Sign up at proco360.com for announcements of each week's guests, to suggest guests, and to find past shows featuring successful entrepreneurs and business experts, all whose souls are grounded here in Colorado. Again, that's proco360.com to sign up, proco360.com.
Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, Sunday mornings at 8 on News Talk 710 KNUS.
At the Colorado Association of Commerce and Industry, we're committed to Colorado. We believe that Colorado should be the place where forward-thinking business leaders choose to invest, innovate, and grow their businesses. And we champion for a positive business climate to drive prosperity for all those who want to work to achieve it. If you believe as we do and want to work side by side to help Colorado thrive, join us with the State Chamber of Commerce. Visit cochamber.com.
Now, back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. This show will be available at proco360.com on Monday. Again, that's proco360.com. And today, I'm speaking with Ed Seelover of the Denver Business Journal, plus two successful entrepreneurs, one from the beer business, one from the hotel industry, sort of. We're going to find out a little bit more about Hotel Engine in just a moment. That's with Eli Wallen. Also, thanks to Kevin Selvey of Crazy Mountain Brewery for being here. I want to thank our sponsors, too. I'm glad to have them on board. Community Banks of Colorado, MicroStar Keg Logistics, appropriate with the Crazy Mountain guys. I'll have to ask you later if you're doing business with these guys. Oh, he's nodding.
No, excellent.
And American Furniture Warehouse. All three of these companies support the show because they support Colorado entrepreneurism. This is the show for that really all about entrepreneurs and experts who could be successful anywhere and choose to start and grow their businesses here in Colorado. And when we went to the last break, we're talking about this notion. I was talking with Ed Seelover about this notion of, is it harder to create loyalty in the restaurant business when there's so many new ones popping up all the time? And you were going to jump in, but we ran out of time. What were you going to say?
We talked about how it's harder for the beer business, but it's also harder for the hotel industry, from what I understand, that especially younger travelers aren't loyal to a brand anymore. They want an experience, and they want something local and unique when they travel, which probably helps out if, say, you've got a whole bunch of hotel brands in your business-to-business travel site.
Well, there you go. There's the segue, the perfect segue. Thank you to Eli Wallen of Hotel Engine. Tell us about what Hotel Engine is, and then I've got tons of questions about how you built it and so forth.
Yeah, Hotel Engine is a Denver-based startup. We are a free membership-based booking platform. We specialize in working with B2B, primarily SMBs, so small and medium-sized businesses. We have 80,000 hotels, and really the idea is we get memberships. Once members come in, we offer wholesale rates.
Okay, so wholesale rates, and I just joined, and I'm now a member. I'm very proud, but I don't know what I'm doing with it because I just joined in preparation of our interview together. But now what am I going to get as a member?
Yeah, so Hotel Engine, because it's a member-based platform, because it's behind a login, we can offer rates on average 23% below public rates that you'd find at any of the large OTAs, so online travel agencies.
Really? I'm going to save money off of the big companies that are advertising on TV if I go through you?
Absolutely.
So how do you do that? From what I could tell on your website and my research, you sort of aggregate based on this large number of members that you have. You're able to aggregate this, whatever, you know, used to be called group buying power, stuff like that, right? So
yeah, in the last 21 months, we've added 66,000 members. And with that purchasing power, we're able to go directly to wholesalers and buy from them, opposed to going in the more traditional channels.
What does going to wholesalers mean?
Going to wholesalers, going to these.
There are wholesalers of hotel rooms?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's wholesalers that will go out and buy 10 million room nights a year in various markets, and then they'll resell them to a lot of times the large online travel agencies.
So these big hotel chains and smaller ones Ed was talking about, they're all basically selling a certain number of rooms in order to, just like airlines, you know, pre-sell seats because they want to make sure they're going to hit their numbers. They pre-sell rooms at certain rates to guarantee there's some sort of level of cash flow?
Absolutely.
I mean, they sell them to wholesalers.
Yeah, occupancy is very rarely 100%, right, unless there's a large event or venue going on. And so they are able to sell to wholesalers to kind of absorb that inventory that they have.
But your model, the wholesale model, is doing it in advance. They're not like you hear about the other ones, the last minute rooms that you can get cheap. You're on the other end. You're at the predictive end.
Correct. Yeah. These companies spend tens of millions of dollars with all of these hotel chains on an annual basis up front because the hotels know that they won't be able to achieve 100% occupancy. So they're willing to give some of that inventory up to a wholesaler at the beginning of the year.
Got it. That secures their predictable cash flow anyway, right, at some point. Right. Well, if you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Eli Wallen of of hotel engines. So I want to learn more about, and the way you make your money is basically you get a 10% off the top and you still save that 23% to your customers.
Absolutely. Yes.
Got it. So let's talk about starting this because it seems like an almost insurmountable kind of a challenge. Okay, we're going to go buy thousands of hotel rooms up front. And guess what? We don't have any customers yet. How do you, to me, it's like this crazy chicken and egg thing. Like customers don't want you until you have all the rooms they want. And hotels don't want to deal with you until you've got all the, how did you figure all that out?
Yeah, so it all started with our other company. We have Travelers Haven. We're a corporate housing company. We had clients that were coming to us that needed shorter term stays. So in the corporate housing industry, it's 30 to 90 day stays. And many of our clients came to us and said, hey, we need a couple nights, a couple weeks. And so that spurred us to build Hotel Engine to offer a shorter term lodging offer.
Yeah, but this isn't one of those things you can dabble in. I mean, if you aren't at scale, you aren't in business, right? So you're laughing. But
absolutely. You know, it was one of those things from an entrepreneurial standpoint. We just went for it. There was not a big thesis, not a big business plan. We had the background clients that we knew there was a demand in the market. We knew that we wanted to give them something, and that kind of grew into the business it is today.
Well, okay, there's a lot of mystery behind all the things you just said that I got to dig into, because did you have funding, some kind of funding source backing you?
Both of the companies, Travelers Haven and Hotel Engine, are completely bootstrapped. Travelers Haven, we started small. You know, we did not go off what you see normally about these companies that go out and raise hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars pre-revenue and try to make it. We started, revenue was a necessity, or we weren't going to make it. So,
well, I admire that, because so many businesses start with everything but revenue, with the fantasy notion that they're going to have revenue, and they've, of course, they got that beautiful hockey stick curve and all that stuff, but they use that to raise money. You haven't raised any money?
We haven't raised any money.
All right, so now I'm really baffled, because how do you have inventory without buying inventory in advance? And so how do you sell to customers without inventory? What am I missing?
Yeah, so the inventory is supply.
Am I missing something, Ed?
He's about to answer.
Okay. Yeah, so we go out and connect with the wholesalers. So these wholesalers are independent companies, and we are just a consumer of their product, of their inventory. So we're not going out and taking inventory and paying these hotels thousands of dollars up front to hopefully cross our fingers and book it or backfill it. So
you buy it from them as you need it?
As we need it.
So as your company has grown, have the wholesalers then had to buy more in order to be able to supply your needs?
The wholesalers like us a lot, but yeah. You know, they're $1 million. I mean, I shouldn't even say million. Tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, right? These are very large companies that are selling globally to all the OTAs. And so we've just found a channel to go directly to them.
So you're a variation of what a Travelocity or whatever are. You've built a different model. You're selling a similar kind of product, but at a deeper discount based on the model you've built.
Exactly. There's an arbitrage in the market, and we found it, and we were able to take advantage of it.
What do they think of you? They must not like this very well.
The wholesalers love it, right?
Yeah.
We're moving their inventory. You know, and you've seen online on commercials, more and more the large hotel chains are saying book direct. Save
the
most.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So there is a war going on with OTAs and hotels that is not close to being over. There's a big battle with reward points and how all of that works. And so we are, I don't want to say in the middle of the war, but we're probably closer to the OTA side and the wholesalers than the chains.
So how does this impact you? We were talking about boutique hotels and all the new smaller brands that are springing up. How does that impact your business?
That's the exciting thing, I think, for us, is we're able to tap into those boutique hotels that don't have so many rooms that the wholesalers and the large OTAs are very excited about, right? Mm-hmm. They can't put a lot of resources in getting a 20-room hotel, whereas we can, because it's kind of a differentiation that we can offer.
Well, let's talk about the back end of this thing, because every entrepreneur gets excited when they start. Like, look, your idea is cool. You could create a mock-up, a software mock-up to show the big Fortune 500 company you want to do. You can show them a mock-up that works because you predicted how it's going to model and you build it. But when you're going to actually build a back-end engine, that's a whole different deal. How do you do that with a bootstrap budget?
Travelers Haven helped. You know, without the cash flow that we had from Travelers Haven, this wouldn't have happened. The developers that we have, we've got some fantastic people internally in Glendale. And, you know, it's very expensive to get off the ground, but...
Like, what kind of expensive? What did you have to invest in your initial... I'm not talking about the beta version. I'm talking about the one that you're actually that you've rolled out now that customers use. What did that cost?
$3 to $4 million, probably, to get to this point.
That's a big boot to bootstrap. Man, that is a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, and if it didn't work, it would have been horrible. But
Did you have days when you're like, when you wondered if it was going to work?
Absolutely. I'm in a forum in YPO, and they I told them, I remember having a meeting, and they told specifically I was sharing that I don't know about this whole hotel engine thing, guys. So that's very vivid. Just 2 years ago.
Oh, I remember, and I'm speaking with Eli Wallen of Hotel Engine and on Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. This show is going to be available at proco360.com, so make sure you check that out. Proco360.com will be up tomorrow. I remember as an entrepreneur, there were nights when I woke up wondering if I was going to be able to make pay. I mean, not just one time a night, where it's mostly awake and little bits of sleep in between wondering, am I going to make payroll? You must have, was there a time when you saw the software and it just wasn't working? You wondered what, if you're actually going to be able to deliver on this vision?
We definitely pivoted a few times. Yeah. You know, we built the platform originally for our original clients of Travelers Haven. And then we realized to really scale, we had to make some adjustments. And so absolutely, you know, when you go to your dev team and say, hey, we're going in this direction, let's do this. And then you say, hey, by the way, let's pivot over here. Yeah. Yeah, they don't love that.
Yeah. How many times did you do that?
Meaningful times, probably 3.
Yeah. And at the third time, what went through your mind as you're telling them you need to pivot again?
I believe that the direction we were going to was the right thing. So just went for it.
Yeah. I mean, I've had to do that too. And when you go back to the same people whose lives you've just turned upside down now the second time and then the third time going back to them, it's a tougher deal. And don't you think? I mean, it's a gut-wrenching ask.
Without a doubt, yeah.
And then they wonder, is this the last time, right?
Yeah, or is this what I'm going to do for a job here at this company? Somebody once told me, you can't fail if you never launch. And that felt like something that we were doing for a while. We were constantly iterating, and we were never going to market. So we could never technically fail if we didn't do it. So
what's your take on that?
You know, I'm glad we did launch. You know, it went out and it was a success. We've made some additional modifications. It's a lot client feedback, you know, is the direction that we take it. And that's kind of the inspiration for all the new features and directions that we go.
Well, I'm wondering, have you had to do that too in the beer industry? I mean, have you had to this is Kevin Selvey of Crazy Mountain Brewery. Have you had to actually pivot hard to shift the direction you're going to build your business?
Yeah, we have. I think our story is a little unique in that, for example, a couple of years ago, we rebranded. We went through a pretty massive rebranding effort. We were a few years old at that point. It was evident that our branding, our labels, wasn't quite where it needed to be to allow us to grow. And so we worked with a firm out of Boulder. It was about an 18-month effort to completely rebrand. And then we had to hit the market again with a brand new look. It was, in a way, it was almost like starting a new company. So it was a pretty big pivot. At about the same time, we also went from producing cans only to producing bottles as well. It was a pretty big shift in the beer industry.
Mm. You know, that's as you're both talking about this pivot, and we've talked about branding. And Ed, we've only got maybe, I don't know, less than a minute left in this segment. But, you know, how important are you seeing as branding, as companies are developing the Colorado market? Are you seeing any trends or anything interesting that piques your interest around branding?
Not essentially. I mean, in fact, you actually, while you see companies going through major brands like this, you actually hear a little bit less when you talk to CEOs these days, I feel like, about branding. It feels like people are more worried about the reviews they're getting, the word of mouth, rather than making that first impression. I mean, especially in the beer industry where, you know, big brewers used to brand just on their funny little commercials. Yeah. Now they want to make a good product. Figure we can get by with that.
Well, I'm going to cut Ed off because we've got to take a break. This is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. We'll be back after this.
CBS News Updates. The sound of deadly floodwaters raging over and through a small Colombian city in the Andes. Red Cross says that death toll is at least 234 now. Swollen rivers near the town clogged by debris overflowing. Residents say they knew something like this could happen.
It has been threatening to happen for some time. Up at the top is unsteady. but this took us by surprise.
The deadly rush of water coming as the city slept. Coming so quickly, many had no time to escape. Sky News reporter Hannah Thomas-Peter.
Colombia's president has declared a state of emergency.
¿Qué sucedió? Anoche.
Well, 30% of the rain for the entire month was produced last night, which has led to the rivers overflowing.
The local hospital has said it is close to being overwhelmed as the frantic search for victims continues.
CBS News Update. I'm Jim Taylor.
Hi, it's Peter Boyles. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay close to a warm radio. That weather will break. We're back Monday morning, 5 a.m. Radio Free Denver, first place to talk in the city. Let's see what we can anger this week. There's a list of people. You know we'll pick one of them. And some will be mad at the end of next week. But that's radio, boys. I'll see you Monday.
Peter Boyles, weekdays from 5 to 9 on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Hi, this is Dave Tabor for American Furniture Warehouse. I'm a big fan of AFW. I'm a fan because I've gotten to know them well, really well. Jake has built AFW to be a company all of us in Colorado can be proud of. He started it by buying out a dying little store and turned it into Colorado's largest family-owned company with thousands of employees and tens of thousands of customers. And guess what? He's done it the old-fashioned way by treating customers and employees right. I've seen how Jake operates. Once, when a worker slipped in a wet shipping bay, Jake invested hundreds of thousands of dollars to install better weatherproofing collars around all the shipping doors so it wouldn't happen again. AFW has its own physical therapy center so that workers can stay healthy, and if someone does get hurt, he or she can be treated immediately by qualified professionals. AFW drivers are incentivized to deliver furniture on time and without damage, and when they do, they earn a lot more than typical drivers. All that and great products at low prices. AFW runs a tremendous business we can all be proud of. I hope you'll shop there as I do.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-400-3816. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-400-3816. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-400-3816. 1-800-400-3816.
The Brad Jenkins Show, making sense of making money.
Yes, investing in this market can be confusing, but it doesn't have to be. At Jenkins Wealth, one of our favorite words is simple. We want to help you understand how your money's invested. I always say, an informed investor is an empowered investor. So join us every weekend as we make sense of making money.
Join us Sunday afternoons at 1 o'clock for the Brad Jenkins Show, Making Sense of Making Money on 710 KNUS.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. And we're at the midpoint of today's show. I'm joined in studio by my friend Ed Sealover of the Denver Business Journal. Ed covers food and hospitality, which includes beer, and that's why Ed comes back frequently. Thanks, Ed.
Thank
Glad
you
you're here,
me.
Yes. And Ed also covers business issues at the state capitol. And later in the show, we're going to dig into some of those important topics that really impact the ability to do business successfully in Colorado. Also joined in the studio by two great entrepreneurs from Colorado, Kevin Selvey of Crazy Mountain Brewing. And we're going to be speaking with Kevin some more in just a little bit about going international, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll get you on deeply diving into this notion of international, Colorado Brews going international. Also, we've been speaking with Eli Wallen of Hotel Engine, a company that grew 500% last year by aggregating clients, aggregating, essentially selling wholesaling, right, to corporate clients. And if we have time, I want to ask Eli, too, of some of the big brands he's gotten. We're going to come back to Eli in just a minute. I want to thank our sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado, MicroStar Keg Logistics, and American Furniture Warehouse.
I also want to let you know, another 30 seconds here or so, that next week I'll be joined by the founders of Ratio, which is a Colorado company that created a product that lets its customers take control of watering using app-controlled hardware. And I'm really intrigued by this because it's a hardware and software integrated product that is getting tremendous reviews on like Amazon and such. It's also gotten rave reviews from CNET, Wired Magazine, Men's Journal, Forbes. And I mean, they're a real deal consumer product that's been produced here, innovated and created in Colorado. So make sure you catch next week's show, 8 a.m. on Sunday at 710 KNUS, again, or via the, you can see any, catch any of these episodes at proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. And I was just about to switch over to Crazy Mountain Brewing, but I got one more question for Eli of Hotel Engine, and that is, you've managed to develop some very high-profile clients, big companies, but their logos aren't on your website. What's with that? It's hard to get them to jump on board with that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very hard. You know, their brand, what we were just speaking about, is everything to a lot of the large companies. And putting a logo on something, a website that they're not quite sure of maybe, or see how the value is there, they're pretty hesitant to do that.
Yeah, so even though you've got some really big clients that you shared with me during the break, those logos are not on your website yet. Wouldn't it be cool, though, if they, at some point, you know, maybe you got to take them to dinner?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we have 20 of the Fortune 100 companies in the platform right now, and unfortunately, I can't mention any of their names. So.
That's really interesting. That's too bad. Maybe in a year, we'll have you back, and you'll be listing them all off.
Sounds fantastic, good. Hopefully.
All right, I'm going to switch gears. I was intrigued by that notion. And you know, so often when entrepreneurs are starting a business, they want credibility. And I just mentioned in the intro about Ratio here and being recognized by CNET and Wired Magazine. I mean, these are really helpful tools. And I know I'm going to switch gears over now to Kevin Selvey of Crazy Mountain Brewing. And getting recognized by outsiders who appreciate and understand your business, that's helpful, isn't it?
Oh, it's immensely helpful in a consumer space like the beer industry. You know, that comes through awards, that comes through events. It's probably, I would say, our core marketing apparatus.
Yeah, Ed, you're nodding. Have you, you know, as Ed Sealover of the Denver Business Journal covers that the craft brewing industry in Colorado, has that been your, have you had a visibility into that notion of I don't know, I guess trying to win awards, trying to raise your visibility that way?
The craft brewing industry is interesting in that there's almost no marketing budget for any of the breweries that are involved here. I mean, maybe we can talk to Kevin. Maybe when you get to your size, you're doing a bit more of that. But most of them start without so much as a single paid ad or marketing. And in fact, I've talked to people such as Tivoli Beer here in Denver who has said that 95% of their marketing budget is the free beer they give away at festivals to try to capture people's attention.
Wow. Wow, and that's been your experience too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but that's not to make that sound like a small amount of money. If we're doing, you know, 80, 90 different beer festivals in Colorado alone in a summer, and you're essentially donating product to those events, I mean, you're
and
talking
staffing them and all.
Yeah,
that.
You're talking a six-figure budget that you set aside for that. So I mean, it is money, but yeah, very little. I mean, we're unique because we're in the mountains where radio and print ads are still applicable for those communities up there. So we do partake in those, but the vast majority of our marketing budgets are event-based.
Wow. Well, we could talk about that. We're not going to talk about that more because I'm really intrigued by the notion that you've gone international.
Sure.
That you are selling Crazy Mountain beer around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that happen?
Yeah, well, let me paint a little picture of where the industry was at when we started to kind of explain it a little bit more. We opened our doors in 2010. There was 1,200 breweries in the U.S., and what is there at now, like 7,400?
Yes. I mean, it's getting close to that. It exceeded, 2 years ago, it exceeded the record number in history.
Hmm. Yeah. So, you know, what happened was it became evidently clear that there was so many new competitors coming into the space that the opportunities to move volume in domestic markets was diminishing. We started looking abroad at possible markets. That's one reason why we decided to go abroad. Another reason is going back to kind of the worth of a brand. For a brand within the craft beer space to be able to say that we sell beer in London and Berlin and Tokyo and these international markets lends real equity to our brand. So that's another motivation. And also those early years, it was a bit of a cash flow motivation because these guys, these importers were fairly large established businesses mm-hmm. that were able to prepay for orders.
So that was,
you know, when we had, you know, 1 to 2,000 cases a month going out the door, that was cash flow. Really good business.
Yeah. Well, one of the thoughts I had is here in the United States, we, and in particular in Colorado, and there are probably a few other states that feel that, that craft brewing is sort of part of their lifeblood, is part of now almost our heritage in a way. It's part of who we are. That's how we see ourselves, and maybe it's self-aggrandizement. But does the rest of the world look at Colorado craft brew and say, oh, this is awesome. This is something that's special that we want.
You know, it's interesting. I wouldn't say that the rest of the world looks at Colorado as a region of craft beer, but it's starting to look at the U.S. as a region. You know, whereas 10, 15 years ago, American beer was considered very poor in quality. All of a sudden, when the craft beer movement in America really started to take steam and it started to get recognition, the world started changing that view. And what it really took was people coming from abroad to the U.S., seeing this movement for themselves, and then going back mm-hmm. and either getting into home brewing or starting their own breweries. And so it took, just like you would see in states around the country, when there became a local movement, craft beer movement within these countries, they inevitably would look to the U.S., who was leading mm-hmm. the industry by far. And that movement has really started to hit almost every continent in the world. Not quite everywhere, but it's getting there.
You know, I saw a video clip. And by the way, if you've just joined us, this is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. And I'm speaking with, at this moment, Kevin Selvey of the Crazy Mountain Brewery. And I'm wondering, is this notion of going international, I saw a video clip where people from China were here, I think it was China, were here at the beer festival, in looking, their importers, looking for products to import. Who's driving this? Are people like you who want to improve your distribution driving it? Or is this demand being pulled from distributors in other countries?
I would say it's more of a demand from importers in other countries. And they see it as a result of local consumers desiring craft beer, but the local craft breweries haven't gotten to the size and the scale where they can really capture all of the demand in a market. So they look towards the bigger suppliers, for example, the large breweries in the U.S. that can send out full containers of beer, which there's, to be honest, there's not a whole lot of breweries in the U.S. that can produce enough beer in one fell swoop to fill a container.
Are other countries discerning between what some would call craft brewers like Sam Adams and what others would call craft brewers like Crazy Mountain?
Yeah, I think...
I mean, really, the huge ones versus, you know, guys like you.
Yeah, speaking about China, if you go to China, it's so new in craft beer that there isn't much of a gap there. They see craft brands as craft brands. There's no real difference between Sam Adams or...
That must drive you nuts.
No, you know, I mean, it really doesn't. But when you look at countries like the UK, for example, that's more established. It's a more established craft mm-hmm. market. There is some of that recognition starting to occur, and there's a lot of minutia there, but you do start to see that. Yeah.
Is it still so? Craft beer really is a novelty in other countries at this point. In many cases, not in the UK, but in other countries.
Yeah, I'd say there's a handful of countries where it you could argue that it is established: Sweden, the UK, a handful of others. But it's very much a novelty in the majority of the countries that are starting to get into it.
Where's your top selling market overseas?
The UK, Korea, believe it or not. Sweden's a large market for us. Every other market is growing at triple digit rates for us.
Are you brewing more to serve those?
Yeah, our about 20% of our production goes abroad. And you send beer abroad in containers, so you either send them in 20 or 40-foot containers. So it's nice because it's a specific production amount.
Are you having to do market research and change any beers, change any product in order to appeal to customers in different countries?
A little bit.
Have you done?
Mostly it surrounds taxes. So we'll produce some beers to a lower ABV to get a realized lower tax rate in those countries. But we do have some beers we produce only for certain countries.
Got it. Well, I think our producer is signaling me that we've gone over already. We'll figure out if we can squeeze these together. We're going to take a break at Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. We'll be back after this.
News Talk 710. KNUS.
When you look around great cities like Denver and you see the amazing new buildings encased in glass, that glass was likely engineered and manufactured by J.R. Butler. At J.R. Butler, they have jobs that reward hard work, inspire loyalty, and develop leaders. How do you know when you find a company that's worth your commitment, one that will reward your loyalty with training and advancement? Felix Mestis, with a high school degree, started in manufacturing and is now Director of Field Operations. He joined CEO Mark Butler on Pro Business Colorado and said this about the opportunity.
That's something that's that back to the culture that we talk about at J.R. Butler. I think that surprises a lot of people, that it's very, very real. It's something that, all you can go one day turning wrenches on a job somewhere to the next day having dinner with the CEO of a large construction firm and being able to have those skills there that they're not necessarily taught anywhere else.
If you are looking for a great company built by building great leaders, contact JRButlerINC.com. That's JRButlerINC.com. Working toward the future together.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa, international relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering. Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to FacingDarknessMovie.com. That's FacingDarknessMovie.com.
I can't say that.
But we can. Sometimes you just can't write the words you want to say or find the right words to express your feelings. But we can. We are the right words. The people who help turn your thoughts into words so you can speak your mind. Too shy to ask that special person out? Try us. We're good at that. Love, hate, revenge, laughter. We're the right words, bringing you the words that make saying the hardest things easier. Learn more at therightwords250.com. W-R-I-T-E. Therightwords250.com.
Now, back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. And today I'm speaking with Ed Seelever of the Denver Business Journal, plus two successful entrepreneurs, Kevin Selvey of Crazy Mountain Brewery and Eli Wallen of Hotel Engine. And in the prior segments, we've spoken with both of them, and we're going to switch to Ed in a moment. I have one more kind of a topical area to talk about with Kevin from Crazy Mountain, and that is that as the beer market in Colorado and the United States has tightened up, do you see people considering starting microbrews or craft breweries for the sole purpose of taking that business overseas and not even trying to market in the U.S.?
I don't think so. I wouldn't say that I know of anybody who's starting a brewery solely to sell beer internationally. I think that's something that you get to when you reach a certain scale. And
What about the other way around? Is anybody going to start – are we going to start importing – craft brews from other countries? I was thinking, like, okay, as I was contemplating this question, Great Panda Stout, right, could come from China. Patagonia Pale Ale, Red Square IPA, or one that will probably never get sold is maybe from North Korea called Censored. But is anything going to come from those countries?
My theory is that, yes, you are going to start seeing craft beer brewed abroad starting to come into the U.S. because there really is some creative quality products out there that – I believe as the market in the U.S. continues to mature, that's going to be a segment that you see really come to life.
That'll be very interesting.
Yeah.
I, for one, will continue to support Colorado brewers.
Right on.
So
right on.
Let me switch gears now, because Ed Seelever's with us. We're in the legislative session right now. Ed's the expert in several industries at the Colorado legislature. And so, Ed, I want to one thing that piqued my interest, even though it's not a huge story, but you covered legislation regarding online pet sitting services. And you're laughing. But
it may not be a huge story, but I've gotten more readership on that than most of the major topics I've written about.
Well, it's interesting to know, to talk about it. And of course, we've got Hotel Engine here with us today, too, which is a technology-backed, it's still this notion of contractor services, this whole gig industry. And what's your take on this?
Well, the bill the bill was written because right now, if you are watching even one dog or one cat in your house for money, you are breaking state law. State law requires that you get a kennel license or a pet boarding license to do that. And so you've got a number of national platforms that are, you know, kind of think of the Uber, the Airbnb of pet sitting, particularly one called Rover.com that was active in this legislation, in which they link up people who need people to watch their dogs with people who can watch them for a price. And the Department of Agriculture was knocking on doors of the most popular Rover.com sitters and saying, hi, you're breaking the law. You need a kenneling license if you want to keep doing this. Hmm. And so this bill sets up, it's a little bit of a complicated platform where basically if you're working through one of these online sites, you don't have to go through the typical licensing of it. But it's a real debate among kennel owners who are saying this is going to destroy our business and you have no oversight, the same kind of rules and regulations that we go through dealing with people's pets. And these people who are probably working 3-4 jobs, some of them I talk to, saying, look, I just need this as part of my income right now.
Well, and there's probably issues around animal noise and things that kennels have to deal with and work around that homeowners don't.
Or issues about the size of the kennel that they can be kept in, how long they have to be let out of the kennel. Admittedly, a lot of these pet sitters are not even going to kennel the dogs. Right, they're just going to have them in the house. But still, there's nothing saying they can't in this regulation.
But I think what's interesting is it's another example of sort of cutting out or allowing consumers for a price or for service or a combination of both to cut out or buy or skip doing business with people who have to invest in infrastructure.
Yes, absolutely. That's what, you know, it's essentially the rule of the sharing economy is that people are willing to pay less in order to get kind of less expertise, if you will, because that's where their wallet decisions are made.
Yeah, well, and wallet or, you know, wouldn't I rather have my pet in someone's home with a backyard than, you know, whatever
that,
the case.
So that's true, too.
You know, so but I'm intrigued by this, and I'll put you on the spot. Do you see any other industries that are sort of turning from more traditional to more of a gig or a shared economy?
Well, I think one that people point out a lot is even just child sitting. In fact, the legislature took preemptive steps this year to allow you to watch 4 kids in your home without getting a license to be a child care facility. Mm. And that's without even, you know, companies like Care.com coming in who have been kind of doing this this gig economy online sharing service as well. But yeah, that's a good example. And I imagine we're going to see more of it, just professional services as the home advisor model catches on with more and more industries.
Yeah, and I'm sure Eli's sitting here thinking, how can I use this technology play for hotels to book babysitters or something? But yeah, and maybe you can start using your breweries for that. I don't know, for dogs or kids or whatever the case.
Yeah, we're definitely dogs.
Yeah, well,
dogs.
For sure. Everything's dog friendly now.
Not in the city of Denver anymore.
What happened with this notion of dogs cannot be in places where they serve food, but now they can be in places where people drink beer?
Can't be in places where they drink beer in the city of Denver because food, and it was a rule change, what, about a year ago or so, that food is considered, or beer is considered a food product. So dogs are banned from the indoor spaces of breweries in Denver, whereas a lot of cities around us, places like Arvada and Englewood, say, hey, bring your dogs in. We don't mind.
Wow, what a great competitive advantage for those surrounding areas. Is that what you...
Oh, yeah. We have 2 facilities, one in Denver, one up in the mountains. For our facility in the mountains where we can bring dogs, it's a much better environment that people enjoy a lot more, certainly.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. It is a more festive environment when you have dogs running around. Okay, switching gears. Ed, transportation, it's a huge issue now. It's in the legislature. Update us on what's going on and what should we be thinking about?
The transportation funding bill, which would ask voters to approve a 0.62-cent sales tax increase to raise about $12, $13 billion over the next 20 years for transportation, just passed its second committee, but it continues to get increasing questions. Some of the latest questions, something that I've reported on, are coming around the idea that the Colorado Department of Transportation has largely a standing policy that if it adds new lanes on interstates and in highly urbanized areas, it likes them to be managed lanes, which could be toll lanes, it could be HOV lanes, it could be lanes that are only accessible during certain times for free. And there are people such as, you know, one of the sponsors of the transportation funding bill, Senator